And now, Sports Day for Kia, the all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Red Energy. Moving house? Call your local energy retailer. Red Energy.
Hurting like a lot of our players are at the moment about the way we're playing. You know, that's the bottom line. And we're supporting Dylan where we can, making sure he's really clear on the expectations, just like we are with all of our players. We haven't played with the hard edge that we need to for consistently enough throughout the season. And Sydney was a game where we were way off the level. It's not about Dylan Shield, it's about all of us as a football club.
Let's get lost tonight. 7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. The mouthguards have gone back in at Tullamarine. It used to be Windy Hill, not so anymore. And Essendon, we can tell you tonight, have gone back to basics. They've told the board, they've told their players, they're scaling back the game plan and they're going back to the contested, the effort-based, the pressure-based side that made them a blue-collar finals team last year. The question is going to be, is it too late? A huge game against the Tigers on Saturday night for so many reasons. Yes, it's dream time. Yes, it's a huge game at the G. But this footy side, who was so impressive under Ben Rutten last year, need to start winning games of football if there is a glimmer of hope that they can get back up the ladder in 2022. So the question is simple for Bombers fans, 133-693. What are you expecting on Saturday night? Because everyone that you've spoken to has probably said there's got to be a response. The question is going to be, how long for? So 133-693, what are your expectations Saturday night? Is it a must-win game? Is it you don't think there's any chance they can win? Do you just want to see four quarters? Have you realigned your expectations drastically in the way that Essendon's football department have realigned the message to their players about effort, about consistency, about pressure? 133-693. We've got Spinalese pillows to give away. We've got family passes to Skydeck. We've got Signet Power Boost Banks as well, valued at over $60. Give us a call, 133-693. Very good evening to Bruce Eva.
Very good evening to you too, Sam. Good evening, everyone. I'm sure most Bomber fans would be just hoping that the time for talk is over. We know it's the nature of the industry with the coach having to face the media a couple of times during the week, and the size of the media industry covering football these days means that it has just been talked about ad nauseum. But, what type of reaction are we going to get? They've got the two resurgent sides before they've got their mid-season bye, being the Tigers, obviously, in Dreamtime, and then a trip to Adelaide to take on Port Adelaide, 2-7.
And those two games weren't looking scary 4 weeks ago.
Exactly. That's why, the two resurgent sides, the two wins, fell over the line against the Adelaide Crows and a massive last, quarter and a half against Hawthorn. They haven't beaten Richmond for 8 years. The Tigers won the past 11. Don't think they're getting anyone of note back into the side either. So,
and then after the bye, Beef?
Your Blues and then my Saints.
Which is a significant day for the footy club, isn't it? The 150th anniversary.
Yep, 150th anniversary and then a Friday night game against my Saints. So it's
doesn't get easier.
It does not get any easier. How they respond in just over 48 hours' time is going to be one of the most fascinating, if not the most fascinating, story of the weekend.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, so Josh Marnie and Ben Rutten have gone to the board and said that they are going to strip it back and basically realign their focus because they're not getting what they want, they're not getting the execution that they want, to just the basics of what made them a finals team last year. Now, that in itself is not drastic or necessarily dramatic. There are plenty of footy clubs, and I know of at least two others, who the footy department have gone to the board and talked to them about realigning elements of their game styles. It does happen fairly regularly in footy. The sexy part of this is that the Bombers are 2-7 and that there is something going on at that footy club, which we don't understand, that in 10 games they've gone from playing in a final to being third bottom on the ladder. That's what makes it an interesting story. Let's hear from Bombers fans. Stephen is in Greenvale. Kick us off, Steve.
G'day, guys. Look, all I want from them is to be intense, tenacious at the ball, throw your body around. I don't want them to go around knocking heads. I don't want that sort of rubbish. I just want them to play with that intensity that they played during the Anzac Day match. just play like every week is an Anzac Day match. Play with a bit of pride and just play to your potential. Don't go knocking heads and trying to be a hero. Don't be something you're not. Just throw your body around, be intense, and just play to your best potential. Even if you lose, I'll go home feeling proud.
That's what most footy supporters turn up wanting every week, Beaver, isn't it? Just honesty.
Well, it's what even the experts say, the non-negotiables. Their favourite phrases and words, aren't they? Effort and compete. And it's interesting, I'd written down Anzac Day before Stephen came on, because this is their next match, which is an event-like match. So whether it's manufactured arousal levels, I mean, we know the importance around Anzac Day just on the national calendar, let alone the football match. Now, this, of course, celebrating everything that Indigenous footballers have brought to our great game is what this weekend and next weekend is about. But again, a big ticket item at the MCG, big crowd, if they can't get themselves up for this and some sustained competitiveness, then really you do have to fear for Ben Rutten and his offsiders.
The hard thing is that they come up against a side who will be equally up for it and in a rich vein of form with some forwards that you wouldn't want to annoy right now. Bill's in Northcote. Hello, Bill.
Scoop, how you going, champ?
Good, mate.
Scoop, I've been bearing for the Bombers for 40-odd years, mate. They're going to get beat by about 8 to 10 goals, mate. There's not all good players out of Essendon's 22 missing. Apart from Bolter and Pickett of Richmond missing, they're fully loaded. They treat us like bunnies. They're going to beat us by 10 goals running away. Following week, Paul Power, Charlie Dixon in, 10-goal hiding. Have a week off, and then the Blue Boys get him, 10-goal hiding, and see you later, Rutten. And you might as well go get Clarko, Scoop. The board's got to look at each other. That Xavier Campbell's mucked up. I don't know how we got a 2-year extension. They've got to get Clarko, Scoop. There is no other answer for it, mate. The bloke's a good bloke, but he can't coach. Simple.
Okay. Bill's painted a pretty bleak picture.
That's passionate, though.
For red and black
bleak
fans.
Bleak, but passionate.
It is passionate. Speaking of passion, Mark from Men's Club, one of the most passionate Bombers you'll find, Beaver. It's just texted in, just want a four-quarter effort, which I think what a lot of Essendon supporters want. Thanks, Bill. Paul's in Warrnambool. Hello, Paul.
G'day, Scoop. Bruce, long-time Essendon supporter as well. I will be going from Warrnambool to the Port Adelaide game next weekend.
Nice.
And looking forward to it. I'd like to see them have a fair dinkum four-quarter effort as well. But they've also got to remember that Essendon don't play well in milestone games. Being a supporter of Essendon for a long time, I remember when Fletcher played his 400th game. So they say about not putting an effort in for Heppel's 200. They don't play milestone games well. They don't play Dream Time of the G very well for a long time. 8-10 years they haven't won. They've just got to get back and put their head over the ball and look for the support from within the group, rather than having the outside noise bring it along. If that makes sense.
Absolutely, Paul. And good on you for sticking by them. And you're going from Warrnambool to the Adelaide Oval, which is a great effort. Take a Signet Boost power bank. It's keeping your phone, your tablet and your earbuds powered 24/7. They are great to walk around with those things. You'll never be out of charge. And Bill from Northcote and Steve from Greenvale, give Lawrence a call back, 133-693. We'll find a spinal ease pillow and a family pass for 2 adults and 2 children to visit Melbourne's Skydeck for you as well.
They probably need a little bit of luck as well. And by that I mean we play with an egg. It's a fluky sort of game. You would expect they're going to be up and about early. They just have to be.
Have to be.
So
could be a couple of fireworks early, actually.
Yeah, but if they can, with some half chances early, you know, lucky bounce,
yep,
maybe a couple of Joe the Gooses over the top or a couple of fluky goals or whatever, and it's amazing then how momentum can be built. You still think Richmond will have more than enough artillery to handle the challenge for however long it is sustained by the Bombers, but you would like to see it not be peter out as a non-contest before halftime.
That's the issue that they've got is exactly what you just touched on. Lynch is kicking goals for fun. Bolton is getting closer to being the best player in the competition than he's ever been, I reckon. And Dusty is he's now third up, is he going to be?
Yep.
And you've just seen in his first two matches there have been glimpses and glimmers of, oh, hang on, he might be ready to take the game by the throat again.
What might be nice and tasty is the Nank against Big Draper. And
yeah, yeah.
Because we like the way Big Draper goes about things.
Yeah, and Nank's in great form. That'll be probably in the best three ruckmen in the comp right now.
Bulls in the paddock. So
he Gorn and Jared Witts, the best three in the comp right now.
Big on Jared Witts, aren't you?
I think Jared Witts is flying. I probably shouldn't forget the Saints. How are the Saints ruckmen going?
Well, as a combination.
Very well.
When they're playing together, yes.
We're here for Macca's. My Macca's Rewards has arrived. Earn rewards with every Macca's run. Ben Brown is playing game number 150 in the number 50. Beaver, he's going to join us next on Sports Day. Beaver, I'm so fascinated by this man's story, the guy who's just about to join us. So Ben Brown started his career at North Melbourne, started in what was a really successful period for the Kangaroos, who we know are going through a tough spot at the moment. And then in a three-year period, kicked 190 goals, more than, say, Jeremy Cameron did in that period. We know that there was a bit of a fallout. Fallout's not the right word, but things didn't work out at North Melbourne. He ended up landing at the Demons. And what a 19 games he's had so far for Melbourne.
19 games, 40 goals. 40 goals, 18, I had a look at today. He's
the sharpshooter.
Once again, he's on a hot streak. I don't think he's missed for 3 or 4 weeks. He probably won't like us saying
don't
that.
Don't put him the moz on him.
And, of course, in the middle of that 19 games, a premiership. So it's a hell of a story.
And on the weekend, plays his 150th, and he joins us on Sports Day. Ben, welcome.
Hello, gents. How are we?
We're good. Little trip down memory lane for you. Can you believe you're at 150 already?
Oh yeah, it has been a roller coaster in many ways. I was having a look. You know, Facebook brings up your memories, and I saw a post from about 11 years ago of myself playing footy down at Glenorchy in Tassie, and that took me right back. So yeah, the road's been a pretty long and windy one, but I'm very grateful for the position I'm in.
Is Glenorchy, Beaver? I'm just trying to. Is that Mitch Robinson territory?
Well, I'm older than you, Sam, so I'm thinking Peter Hudson territory, yeah. And they're the Magpies, aren't they,
the
Ben?
Magpies.
And we're black and white.
Absolutely, yep, dead right.
There you go. And now it's a nice, neat sort of 150 against the former club.
Mm.
Your first game as a Demon was against the former club, so there's lots of symmetry there, Ben, isn't there?
Oh, 100%. My first game for North Melbourne was against the Demons, so I'm trying to line them all up. Unfortunately, 100 was against Fremantle, I believe. So I did that one in. But yeah, it is funny. I'll definitely enjoy getting out there against the old mob and back at Marvel Stadium again. Haven't played there this year, so yeah, it'd be good.
Well, Ben, we spoke to Adam Treloar last night. Of course, he played against his former club. Last week, he plays his 200th this week. So your first game as a Demon was against the Kangaroos. Can you remember the emotions surrounding that and how hard or how raw that was? And are you expecting it to be a lot easier? This is only the second time you will have played against the Kangaroos since you changed clubs. And not will it be not nearly as hard to, what's the word, to negotiate?
Yep.
Yeah, well, look, it was there were definitely mixed emotions the first time, you know, particularly to be a first game for the new club. At that point, I was just trying to, figure out my spot in the team and playing with new guys that I hadn't really got used to playing with yet. And, you know, to have the playing against the old side in the same week, I suppose it was probably a blessing in a way that I could get both out of the way at the same time. But yeah, this week it'll be another great opportunity, I suppose, for the team. You know, we've been going really well for the start of the year, but you know, we lost a few games last year, probably against teams that we should have beaten. And you know, against the Eagles on the weekend, it wasn't all easy running either. So for me, it'll just be about trying to play my role for the team and help us get across the line again this weekend.
Ben, I know it sounds like a weird question, but footy, we're often told by coaches and players, is about, you know, motivation and consistency. How do you keep things fresh when you keep on winning and so convincingly?
Oh, I think our coaching staff in particular are pretty good, you know, and our leaders are pretty good at keeping us on task. You know, I think after last year, we know the emotion and everything that goes into a premiership, and we want to get there again this year. So that's a massive motivating factor, and particularly the fact we won it out of Melbourne, and Be great to get to that point again. But a lot of what we've been talking about is the process that went into that grand final success. And that was done during the year, games like this weekend. So I think, you know, we really understand the importance of every game and the importance of building the kind of team that we want to build and the kind of game that we want to build. And that game, as you said, is fundamentally based on consistency and consistency of performance. So it's important we're all putting our best foot forward every week, and it helps when we've got guys in the VFL at the moment that are AFL players really playing in the VFL. So I think in the last 2 weeks we've had three different guys kick six or more goals. So to have that kind of that pressure, I suppose, coming from the bottom means you've got to perform to keep your spot.
Yeah, and although there's consistency, the ultimate consistency with performance, there's no real fluidity with selection, but that's kind of working for you. I mean, last year you were in and out of the side, but found yourself in the team at the right time of the year. That was mainly the forward line. This year we've got Angus Brayshaw, Beaver, who's gone down back and is dominating, and suddenly when Hibbert and Salem and those sort of likes are available, they don't become automatic selections. And Simon Goodwin spoke, I thought, really well about that this week. So the competition for spots is probably helping.
Oh, absolutely. And we know that, and I think this is a good thing, that no one spot is set. You know, I think it really is based on performance as to how the team looks on the weekend and the selection process. So for us, we know that there's a lot of consistency in the decision-making there. We know that if we put our best foot forward when we're in the side, that we'll keep our spot. But at the same time, the guys playing in the VFL they're really pushing forward for those spots. So, it is a great problem to have. And it's also great that we've got that depth to cover some of these guys who have copped injuries at for the early part of the year. And we know that'll continue to happen. So, it's important to have those guys pushing up from the bottom.
Well, Ben, indulge us here. And I know you're not a selector, but if we could just talk about the magnets for a moment. So can you see at any stage, if Gawn and Jackson are in the side, is there any way you can possibly see the names Brown, McDonald and Wiedemann are all in the same side?
Oh, geez, it's a tough ask, isn't it? And I suppose that's what we've been battling with, I suppose, over the last year. And, you know, I get on really well with all of those guys. But we do know that we're probably fighting for, four of those spots out of five. Otherwise, you do tend to become a little bit top heavy. Look, I'd love to see it happen. I think we're all capable of playing good footy, and we'd be capable of playing good footy in the same side. But at the same time, you know, there are certain realities around getting the right balance of players out on the field. And, you know, that's probably where we sit at the moment is how it's been for the majority of the last year or so. So, look, it's up to Goody. If he's listening, give us a chance. But but I think for the most part, we'll leave that up to him.
Hey, Ben, as the key forward that you are, do you have a gripe or a little frustration right here, right now, with a rule that you think doesn't get implemented well enough, or something that, you know, the umpires have laxed on a little bit? That's not me asking you to have a go at the umpires at all, but, you know, the guy who usually sits here, Jared, is always on the fact that pushing the back beaver is never paid anymore. I'm just seeing, as someone that plays out of the goal square most weeks, what are you noticing in 2022?
Oh, geez, it's a tough one. This question does come up a bit. And I suppose, you know, I tend to just float with the way the game's going at the time and try to do my best to play it the way it is. Because as we know, that there are tweaks that happen within the game. So, look, I'm pretty happy with it at the moment. If they could pay a few more free kicks for the key forwards, that'd be great. Doesn't matter how. But, look, to be honest, I think the game's in pretty good shape.
And you appear very cool and calm on the field. If you thought the decision didn't go your way, would you right here, right now, if the ball was 200 metres away, politely have a conversation with an umpire? Or given the last sort of 8 weeks, is talking to umpires just too dangerous right now?
Oh, no, I think the immediate reaction is probably what's being put under the microscope. I think most most umpires that I've talked to, and I have had a couple of conversations, you know, at different times, whether it's quarter time when everything finishes and you can kind of come back and ask about a decision, or, you know, say, oh, I think that this guy's holding me in a marking contest. Look, can you have a look at it? Generally, they're pretty good about that stuff. So, yeah, I think probably it's that immediate reaction, and it's what's on the telly, and it's what everyone can see, and I can understand that. But yeah, I think there is still an opportunity to have those kind of conversations. It might just be a little bit later on in the piece.
Ahead of his 150th game, Ben Brown's our special guest on Sports Day. Ben, Sam and I both like to think that we've got a fair grasp on footballing history, and we're having a chat off air just before you came on tonight, and I'm sure you've told the story before, but we can't recall, why do you wear number 50? I know you've obviously been asked about it over the years. You mightn't have had to tell the story for many, many years, but we couldn't put a finger on it as to why you actually do.
Yeah, so I was actually quite late to join my first footy club. I always played school footy growing up and wore my uncle's number. It was James Manson, who played at Collingwood and Fitzroy. So he wore number 30. So I wore that growing up playing school footy. When I went to my first footy club, was Devonport Footy Club, my hometown. I was a bit late to pre-season because I was playing basketball at the time, and I rolled in, and the only jumper that fit me, it was the right size, was number 50. And so I went, yep, that's my number. And every club I've moved to since I've asked for it, I thought, well, it's a nice sort of even number right there in the middle, and no one's going to fight me for number 50, so I can have it wherever I go. Yeah, so that's the reason. I thought it'd be nice and clean to have the same one as I went on. So, yeah, that's the reason.
Well, you've kicked 327 AFL goals in it. It's proven pretty successful, and on the weekend you'll run out for the 150th time, which in itself is a nice even number. Ben, congratulations on everything so far. Good luck on the weekend, and let's hope to see you deep in September again.
Thanks very much, guys.
Ben Brown, Melbourne forward. More Sports Day after this.
It's time for the teams. Thanks to APCO. Win a Vespa. On now at APCO.
Welcome back. Sam McClure, Bruce Evo with you. Let's go through the teams all games. Carlton and Sydney. It's a huge contest at Marvel Stadium. Could get close to 50,000, I reckon, Beaver.
Well, there's no could about it. If it doesn't, I'll fall off my chair.
Oh, just please. How many times do they get 50,000 at Marvel? When's the last time they had 50,000 at Marvel?
Well, I don't know. I haven't got the numbers in
and
front of me.
And I'm saying it's Carlton.
Match of the round.
Carlton against a non-Victorian side, and you're scoffing at me. Can you just let me make a big statement and go with me?
Carlton flying. Well, it's not a big statement.
I think it's a big statement.
I'm surprised we haven't heard that it's a sellout yet. We heard last week that Collingwood Bulldogs was a sellout, and they got 44,000. But
never believe a sellout.
It will be heaving tomorrow night.
Lewis Young and Liam Stocker in for the Blues, so they get a couple of soldiers back. Kemp's been dropped, Nunes managed, and Williams injured. Jeez, I hate when they bring in two and drop three. The whole Medi-sub thing is stuff the teams. Anyway, it's a gripe of mine. Colin O'Riordan in for the Swans for the suspended James Robotten. Ryan Clark was the Medi-sub. Had he seen that game, Beef?
Sydney, but with no confidence.
Yeah, it looks like a toss of the coin, doesn't it? We go to Adelaide and your Saints. Early game on Saturday at the Adelaide Oval.
It's actually Saturday night. I'm not sure why it's second on the list, but...
It is too. I beg your pardon. It's Saturday, but it is listed as second, is it not? Anyway, it is. We'll go through it. They get back Lockie Murphy and Riley Thilthorpe, the Crows. Himmelberg's been dropped, which I know will be of great interest to G. Healy, who's the number one fan, I think, of Elliot Himmelberg.
Himmelberg family generally?
Or? Yep. No, mainly Elliot.
Thilthorpe, of course, the hero in Cairns last year after St Kilda led 5-7 to nothing and then... managed to lose in the last 90 seconds in the wet.
Scholl's been dropped and in for St Kilda, as we already found out, Nazaia Wanganeen-Miller, who was an early pick, top 10. He was the man that famously was picked ahead of the local boy, Josh Sin, who ended up at Port Adelaide, but obviously comes from some great family roots.
Has been very good so far. Rested last week.
Yep.
And Marcus Windhager, who was terrific last week, coming on as... the Medi sub to replace the concussed Jack Higgins will start in the 22. He was
11,
superb
yep.
last week.
And
Windhager.
And well done to Bradley Hill in game number 200. Geelong, and I assume the Saints should get the job done there?
I hope so.
Geelong and Port Adelaide, which actually is the early game at GMHBA Stadium.
Here's a forgotten name.
Gary Rowan.
First game of the year? Has to be.
Yep. So he had a back injury in the off-season.
Yep.
And he actually has been the forgotten man. I mean, I forgot that Geelong were playing without him.
And I reckon I've read in reports over the last few days, has he even been potentially going to be used a little bit in the midfield?
Yeah, would make sense, given that they've added to their forward stocks. So him and Buse are in. Cooper Stevens was the medi sub. Myers has been managed, and Mitch Nevitt has been omitted. A little bit stiff. Port Adelaide get back Jonas and Dumont. Frederick, Fantasia and Dersma have all been dropped. Is that the second time this year Dersma's been dropped? I think it is.
Yeah, well, a few weeks ago he was medi sub, so
yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Fantasia dropped.
I reckon Trent Dumont would get a game for North Melbourne at the moment?
Yes.
A few weeks ago, he played one of the best quarters of footy I've ever seen him play. I think it was the third quarter against the Bulldogs on the Friday night.
Yep. He's one of those players that always had a fair bit of upside. But when a team like North were going the way that they were going, they saw him as, well, they don't think he's going to make them better long term. But that was the problem. When you cut that deep, you end up playing with kids that might not be ready to play anyway. We digress.
While I think about it, I mentioned Friday night, John Longmire is going to join 3RW football pregame.
Nice.
Tomorrow night before the big Blues-Swans match.
Well, it's a big game and the Swans have been in the headlines, so looking forward to hearing from Horse on 3RW football. North Melbourne and Melbourne. It's 4:35 at Marvel Stadium. Greenwood, Horn Francis, Simkin and Sherry in for North, so some good ins for
that
a side who need them.
That could be their centre square setup for the opening bounce.
It absolutely could be. In fact, it probably is. To be honest, Bontempi-Senavalagi has been dropped, as has Coleman Jones, which is not good news, as has Jaden Stevenson, which is also the second time he's been dropped this year. Jack Marnie injured. Lazaro was the medi sub. So, look, when you bring in someone like a Coleman Jones and North are going as badly as they are and he's been dropped, and Jaden Stevenson, who played some really good footy for North Melbourne last year, getting dropped for the second time, it just... Yeah, they've got some issues there down at North. Melksham back for the Demons. He's in for the injured James Harms. They've just got so much depth. It's not funny. And as we just heard from Ben Brown, he's playing game number 150. Let's go straight to Dreamtime. Huge contest. Tigers, Bombers, Gibkiss and Tarrant in for the dropped Nguyen and the suspended Marlon Pickett. We know that Noah Bolter is out with that hammy. Damien Hardwick told us earlier in the week.
The young and the old.
Devin
Gibkiss and Tarrant.
Yep. And Devin Smith is back for Essendon. He's been in and out of the side. Caldwell didn't get up after that heavy knock, and Cutler has been dropped. Any chance the Bombers?
No.
I would agree.
We want to see them give plenty of cheek for a long time.
Yep. A few weeks ago, we wouldn't have thought this was going to be as good a game on paper as it is. It's the Dogs taking on the Suns in Ballarat. Tim O'Brien is in for the Western Bulldogs for the ill Taylor Giray. And no change at Gold Coast, although because of 23, Darcy McPherson is the man that has been dropped. Wow, that could go either way.
Well, and this is no disrespect to Adelaide. They stuffed up a game in Ballarat a few weeks ago.
No doubt. No, that's true.
Losing by a point. Might have cost some of us getting 9 out of 9 that round, actually.
Did it?
Look, Gold Coast have been very, very good, but... they've actually got close to the... I'm now starting to argue against myself.
They're getting... Yeah, the last few games, they've gotten closer and closer to the Dogs.
To the Dogs, yeah. Although, no, there was one game they got blown off the park.
They got
the
beaten by
half.
10 goals when they were about 15 goals down at halftime, yeah.
Yeah. Still Dogs in Ballarat.
I'm tipping the Dogs with absolutely no confidence. And then we get into the... these are the Sunday squad games, so we'll just give you the headlines. Good to see Mick Walters back for Freo. Collingwood have got a lot of ins, including Mason Cox, who's been recalled. Jack Ginnivan's back. Jamie Elliott's back. Scott Pendlebury is back. That is good news.
Some firepower for the Dockers, though. As you said, Walters, Tabiner and Switkowski. Very important at ground level in their forward 50, Switkowski, for the Dockers, having a fine season in purple.
And GWS versus West Coast, which looks very one-sided. The Giants have named 9 ins. Can you believe that? Jesse Hogan is the main man of that, the headline.
And that might be the first time this year that an opposition of the Eagles have had more, I know it's a squad, more ins than West Coast have had.
Yep. Cooper Hamilton, Lachie Keefe have both been dropped. Lachie Whitfield is out injured. Nick Haynes is ill. Finn Callahan injured. So a couple of good outs as well. And the West Coast get back Gaff, they get back Shuey. We know that Liam Ryan is suspended. Jamie Cripps is ill. And then the Hawks and the Lions down in Tassie. Plenty of ins for both sides. Tom Mitchell's back. CJ Changwath Jath is back. Liam Shields is back. Finn McGuinness has been dropped. James Warple, the best and fairest winner, has been dropped. Jack Gunston, we know, is out with that injury. So Sam Mitchell, who said on Footy Classified on Monday, Beaver, that they're still trying to work out their best midfield mix, is continuing to play around with selection. And then both Robertson and Robinson are back for Brisbane, as is Ryan Lester. Marcus Adams out with health and safety protocols. Hawks play well down there, but Brisbane are flying.
Yes, yeah, Brisbane handling every challenge put in front of them at the moment. I mean, very impressive what they did to Adelaide last week. Crows got out to a 2.5-goal lead and with their tails up in front of their home crowd, and then Lions reeled off the next 8 goals. So wouldn't be surprised if it's a similar game where Hawthorn up and about, you know, passionate crowd down there at Lonnie, but Brisbane still to get the job
done.
Now,
don't look at the screen. Look at me.
Look at me.
Lawrence and Matt have done the research out the back. The last time there were 50,000 plus at Marvel. Do you want to take a stab at the year? Careful, we don't go off air.
Yeah. No. No idea.
2012, when Geelong played Essendon. So it rarely happens, Beaver. So my call, in fact, would be the first time in a decade.
So if there's 49,638 there tomorrow night,
I would have been wrong.
The place still.
I would have been
thumping and heaving.
More Sports Day after this.
A sports update thanks to Tyre Power. Save $100 on Cooper four-wheel drive tyres.
It is a significant amount of money. I'm aware of that, but it's the right amount of money for these players to be earning, given everything they do and what they bring to the game and the hard work they're putting in.
Welcome back to Sports A. That's the voice of Gillon McLachlan confirming the new CBA for the women's, a one-year deal. It's a 94% increase across the board. Tier 1 players will receive $71,935. They were previously getting just a tick over $37,000. I think, a lot of people will have different reactions to this, and I know that 1 year isn't enough, and I know that 10 home and away games isn't ideal, but year on year for where the game is at, that's a great result for the women, in my view.
Agreed.
Now, yes, you go, please.
They all listen.
Of course. Don't they?
So Patrick Keane, long-time AFL executive, still like to refer
to...
He's
basically run the place under Gillon for a long time.
One of the best journalists AAP ever produced as well. That's going way back into the dinosaur days.
Well, don't age him too much.
Well, he's the same age as me. Might have me by a year. He texted during the ad break, Carlton versus Sydney, brackets or South Melbourne, have a record crowd in Victoria of 45,000.
Right.
And that was set back in 1934 at Princes Park, which is the oldest standing head-to-head crowd record of any two clubs in the competition.
Which would be home and away.
I went back to him and said, of course, home and away, because the Bloodbath Grand Final
45.
In 1945 got almost 63,000 at Princes Park.
And they get 63,000.
Well, there wasn't a lot of stands there. It was only the old Gardner stand. But that is incredible for the home and away record. So
they'll break that.
Well, they should.
If they don't break that tomorrow night, something has gone wrong.
It'll be a disappointing crowd. It'll be like the 80.
Although you've already said the AFL are going to break a 10-year record at Marvel Stadium by guaranteeing that there'll be 50 there. So I can't wait to listen to 3LW football tomorrow night, in which John Longmire will be a special guest.
I'll be counting them.
And see Bruce Eva counting them. Beaver, finally, you're tipping the Swans in the hardest game of the round?
Yes, as we said earlier, with no confidence. And I think you said you're tipping the Blues with no confidence.
Yeah, I think the Blues will beat the Swans. I'm confident there's not going to be 50,000 there.
I surprised you during the outbreak. I asked you a question about the capacity of the SCG.
It can't be 46,000. Someone's
That's
lying.
What it says in the
There's
AFL
no way the SCG is at 46,000 people there.
46,817.
Night, everyone. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Sam McClure and Bruce Evo with you for the next hour. And we've got Chris Tezewski coming on, Beaver, Australia's new heavyweight boxing champion.
Looking forward to having a chat to him, Sam, a week and a day on from probably ending...
Destroying Paul Gallen.
Yeah, probably ending Paul Gallen's career, who's 40 years young. And
so he won't fight again?
I'd be staggered if he did.
Okay.
copping a beating from Tezeski after last year, copping a beating from Justice Huni. He's 40. Gee, he's taken a lot of punishment, both as an NRL player and as a boxer over a dozen or so pro fights. So I think it's time for him to just stick to the media work.
And we're going to have another look at our chat with Ben Brown, the Melbourne star forward, who we chatted to earlier in the show. Big game this weekend because it's his 150th and once again playing against his old club. He's got a habit of that.
First game for Melbourne was against North. His 150th career game is going to be against North. I think his first game for North, his senior debut, was against Melbourne.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. That keeps happening. Game 200 must be against North as well.
Yeah, well, as he told us, well, I think his 100th was against the Dockers, so hopefully we'll be able to work.
Didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
But let's get to this man, the chief of the AFL record, Ash Brown, all here for Polaris. Welcome, Ash.
Hello, boys. Good to be with you again.
I don't like sitting in this chair that Jared's got because I don't get to see you as much, Ash. That's disappointing. I have to change. This is good. This is good radio. Just moving the screens
and interior decorating while we're on air.
What takes your fancy this week, Ash? Media things. Well, there's a lot to talk about.
There's been a lot to talk about. I didn't see it, but the Eddie McGuire, Caro Wilson.
Oh yes, let's get straight to it.
On the Footy Classified last night, it's got everyone talking.
Play the audio, Matty.
It's one game, Ed. It's not going to change everything.
I like your perspective, because it's a club president perspective.
No, this is...
You understand this is from the cost of a club.
I'd tell you more than that, mate. I'll give you the tip. When Mr. Amazon, when Mr. Paramount comes to the table and says, what are the top shows? And it's got Married at First Sight and all the rest of it, because we left 2 million people on the table in Queensland and New South Wales,
Look at the whole,
Caro, Caro, I wouldn't know. I've only done the negotiations in this and ran a footy club for 23 years.
Greater Western
Saturday
Sydney,
afternoon,
giving
you,
up
you know
soccer,
what you do? You play
Australian
ring,
rules
what
footy.
What do you lose,
Caro,
by going to Twilight?
Caro, you
what
play,
do you gain? What do you lose?
Caro, stop for a
tradition,
second.
One,
Caro,
yet another, shift away.
Stop. Please, they play Ring Tin Tin on a Saturday afternoon.
been on that desk, that's quite funny.
We needed the boxing bell.
It did.
Seconds out.
That is sort of vintage Ed, really.
Vintage Ed.
Just, I'm not sure if it's relevant to deprivation syndrome or it is a man who has been in the room a few times trying to tell Caro what really goes on.
So has he been consulted by the AFL as part of previous broadcast deals, Ash?
I think...
Is that what he was alluding to?
I think he... Yeah, he... I took that as, you know, he's, if not officially in the negotiating room, he certainly would be having conversations with key negotiators.
I mean, you could say what you want about Ed, but he did run Channel 9 for a short time. He's run a very successful footy club for a long time. He's well-versed to speak about what the footy rights are worth.
Yeah, I think he'd have a reasonable understanding of what takes place in these negotiations. I think he's going to be disappointed. I think the AFL might go one more year at 230. But
do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gill's thinking last year, there was going to be a 230 grand final last year until it got moved, and it was to thank you for the fans for their support.
Mm.
So I don't see any reason why that changes. I think they'll announce 230 and then say, but from 2020, get ready everyone from 2023. We're going to Twilight. I think it'll be a sort of... I'll give everyone 12 months to get used to the notion of a Twilight grand final.
So I'll put all my cards on the table here, and that I know that I'm in the minority. Like, absolutely. But I'm just being honest here, as a 30-year-old that can kind of go in the wind where the wind blows a little bit, I could not care less what time the grand final was on. I couldn't care less if it was midday, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. It just... I'll be there watching it. It's grand final day. I love the festivities. I love the grand final morning. I love walking down Swan Street in the afternoon. Like, whatever it is, I don't mind. Caro seems to be passionate about the fact that the vast majority of people want it to stay at 2:30. And I know that we've done polls, but I still haven't got to the bottom of whether that's true or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure the vast majority are true. The people who make the most noise about it are the people, and such as the AFL Fans Association.
The AFL Fans Association, goodness gracious me.
The ones who make the most noise about it and most shrill about it are the ones who invested in wanting to stay where it is. And I think the majority of people don't really care.
Why does it have to stay where it is? I mean, tell me other things in the
because
world that stay
works.
Where they... But that doesn't mean that something another time can't
work. Is it
work.
Broken?
No, I don't think so at all.
Why are we trying to fix it?
Well, I don't mind them trying a 440 grand final because...
Yeah, I'd go to... I'm happy for 2 hours later, no more than that. I'd happy with a 4:30 start.
So what's wrong with a night grand final?
Tell you one group that wouldn't be happy with a night grand final, that's the Thin Blue Line.
Yeah, police would definitely not be happy with it. Although, Beaver, I was on Swan Street after the 2017 grand final when Richmond fans nearly tore the whole joint down. And that was a daytime grand final that turned into night. They were still partying at 11 p.m.
The City of Melbourne very keen for a twilight grand final.
Oh, as if the city, what the Lord Mayor?
No, I think the restaurants and bars and what have you, because they get lunches and dinners, and that works for them.
You get pre-game, post-game.
Yeah, pre-game, post-game. So
it's not that cool.
So they're in favour of it, but we're not here to really talk about the grand final start time, but I think it will be. I think Eddie's going to be jumping up and down for at least one more year because I think my gut feel it'll be status quo.
If we get more TV like last night, then...
Yeah, it's good. I loved it.
Let's keep dragging it out.
And given we're going to do hand wars later in the show, Tom Brown put his neck on the line last week when he said that the AFL had basically already chosen it to be a twilight grand final. Now Ash is coming out and saying, I reckon it's going to be 2:30.
That's not male. That's just gut feel.
Yeah, okay, but... As someone that has previously gone with the story a little earlier than he had to, you sort of end up having a few sleepless nights when other people start reporting different things. Anyway, we digress. We should probably talk about the Bombers, Ash, and very much from a media sense. Tell me, what was your gut reaction, your first reaction, when you heard Dyson Heppel say that he hadn't seen the Luke Parker vision before?
Absolutely staggered. Of all the things I've heard this year, that one just blew me away.
I believe him.
Well, then if that's right, then there's an issue with the, how do you not brief, if they decide we're going to put you on the couch live at 6:30 on a Monday night, how are you not briefed? This is what they're likely to discuss with you.
And I think the club would say that he was briefed about the incident, but he was specifically saying that's the first time he'd seen that vision. Now, I agree. I'm a cynic as well. You can roll your eyes at that. But I'm not. Given that Dyson has a record of being a pretty honest person, I'm willing to take that at face value, that he knew of the incident but hadn't seen the vision.
I don't doubt that.
But you're saying that he should have been shown.
He should have shown the vision. Okay. That's what I don't understand.
Were you just on the Dyson Heppel interview for someone as polished a media performer as Dyson is, having just turned 30, as we know, on that horrible night for them, played his 200th game.
Good age, 30.
I couldn't believe he dropped the magic on...
Twice.
Was it twice?
Twice. Yeah. F-word twice.
Yeah.
I was watching that live in the Nine studios before Classified, because Caro called in sick. I thought, he said it once, and I went, did he just say... And then 15 seconds later, he went again, I went, hang on. And because they're live there on the couch.
The beauty of live TV. Yeah, a bit surprised. If it come from Dyson Heppel, who's a pro and a great performer, and one of those players, he said, could he do media afterwards? Probably could when he's finished playing. Very surprised. But just shows that passions and tensions are inflamed at Essendon at the moment.
How does the footy record write positive stories about the Bombers at the moment?
Well, that's interesting.
You don't.
We got their
just pretty important year for them, isn't it?
So we've committed to doing a cover story in Essendon. I mean, I'm happy to share this. I mean, I'm trying to work out what the angle's going to be because you could write a piece about what a big, important, powerful club they've been for 150 years, but their supporters and others will look at it and say, well, it's a joke. I mean, it's just a puff piece about a club that's in a serious crisis at the moment. So trying to spin it. The thing I find really interesting, with they requested Carlton to play that game. I know we're looking 2-3 weeks down the track. Carlton will thrash them at this stage. It's going to be a miserable evening.
Right here, right now, it doesn't
matter. They handpicked Carlton. They should have handpicked Hawthorn, their other big rival, who they probably have a 50-50 chance of beating on that night. But they've picked Carlton. Carlton will comfortably beat them. Carlton, the same team that turned up to two of Collingwood's...
rained on the parade.
Twice they've done it, Carlton. So they'll be looking to make the hat-trick. Don't you worry about that. You know, if I'm a Carlton supporter, I am circling the calendar to get to that game as well. But they'll get 90,000 that night, beat it. Maybe Carlton's would all turn up wanting to watch the parade being rained on.
As a person that grew up a Carlton supporter, I am very interested to see what crowd they get tomorrow night at Marvel Stadium against Sydney. Because as we know with Carlton supporters, they tend to come out of the woodwork when things are going well. And that's not a criticism. That's just the way that the Navy Blue operate. And things haven't been going well for a while. Now, they got over 40,000 when they played North Melbourne. Sydney fans tend to make a good enough turn up, and they're going well, Beaver.
It shouldn't even be a discussion point. What are you alluding to?
I think they could get close to 50.
Absolutely.
That would be a massive result for a club that has basically been asleep for 20 years.
That's 66,000 against your Hawks, Ash, back in the first month of the season. Yeah.
Here I was thinking I was making a big statement.
If it's anything less than 48, I'll fall off my chair.
You
get 8,000 to 10,000 Swans fans who come to every game in Victoria because they only play 5 or 6, and that rusted on support. So they know that there will barely a spare seat in the house for that game. So
I'm surprised we haven't heard whether it's actually a sellout yet. Has there been any announcement that it's...
Oh, I haven't yet to hear that.
Yeah. We should check on that.
We should. We've got a break. And after the break, I want to talk to you, Ash, about something that Beaver and I were discussing off-air before we started tonight a couple of hours ago. But first, the Dustin Martin conversation. Dimmer's response, Peggy O'Neill's response, Lethal saying he didn't like Dimmer's response. Where do you sit with it? We made too much of this in the media, or
no? We never make too much of this. This has got everything. This is what we like. It's dusty and it's trade. I mean, this is why there's a radio station that goes for 3 weeks every October talking about this sort of stuff. Mm. I don't think we've made too big a deal of it. I think there is a smallish window. I mean, the trade experts know more about this than me, and are sort of suggesting that there's no cap room at either the Giants nor the Swans to make it happen. But I think there is a window there, and I think. Damien Hardwick's remarks are planting a small seed. If it does happen, I'm trying to control the narrative from the start and maybe trying to steal Richmond supporters into accepting that it may happen. Or the Tiger fans I speak to, Beaver, seem to be thinking, this is great. He's been brilliant for us. If we can fast-track the rebuild with a couple of early picks or Tom Green or Tim Taranto or someone, we'll do it. They're being very pragmatic, the Richmond supporters.
Well, they certainly have. I mean, and as the senior coach said, he doesn't owe them a jot. Which club would he go to? I mean, because you're
Sydney.
Talking, well, Tim Taranto and the names that Ash just mentioned play for the Giants. They don't play for the Swans.
Mm, then you go to Sydney if he goes.
I think he'd rather play for Sydney.
They'll find a way, the Swans.
They always do.
They always find a way. Buddy's about to finish. There's a
lot more romantic. The Tom Green thing with the... You know, grandson of Michael, multiple premiership player, makes more sense. But, well, Matt Rendell, just a ambit.
Was he Papley in a first-round pick?
Yeah. You'd take that in a heartbeat, wouldn't you?
If you're Richmond or Sydney?
Richmond.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would. Dusty's, what, nearly 31, didn't you say?
31 next month. With a lot of...
And Richmond paying part of the salary?
Well, no, you couldn't do that.
No?
No, you couldn't do that. I'd be saying, if I was Richmond, you'd be giving up Dusty. You'd say, by the way, he's coming with $1 million. You guys worked that out. Although Sydney could offer him a longer-term deal and you could stretch it out. Anyway, we digress. Ash, when we come back with you, I want to talk to you about the AFLW-CBA, new deal locked in, Nicole Livingston working a side gig while this has all been happening, and also deadlines. I mean, you're constantly working on deadlines now with the record. Beaver's worked in deadlines. I've sort of grown up with a different form of deadlines. Talk about that after this on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Ash Brown is chief of the AFL record. He's here for Polaris, Australia's number one selling brand, side by side. Bruce Eva is in the studio as well. Ash, the women's deal has finally been locked in. Thank goodness we got there. Oh, I actually think it's a fantastic deal for the women. 94% pay rise. And they're not earning huge money, but you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I take Chloe Malloy's point last night that they would like to play more than 10 games. I agree. I think they probably should. But all in all, I think that's a good deal.
It's a great deal for 1 year. It recognises that they need to get to an end place, but they can't get there yet. But I think the 94% increase is terrific. These women are putting so much into the game, and they're going to start to be financially rewarded and recognised for that. Two seasons in 1 year is going to be complicated. I think there'll be a few sore girls towards the end of the season, having done two seasons in 12 months. But it's necessary to get to where they want to be at the end. So it's great. Great we've got a starting date. Great we've got a date for the grand final. And the AFL can get to work on what should be a pretty spectacular season with all 18 clubs.
So Chloe Malloy told Beaver and I last night that she compared Nicole Livingston being at the swimming as a parent leaving her at a shopping centre when she was young, which I thought was a fascinating analogy or metaphor, if you like. Have you got a problem with Nicole Livingston having a side gig?
Absolutely none, because we're living in an era of mobile phones, iPads, laptops, Zoom. She can be across the key points. You know, if she's at the pool for a couple of hours calling races and calling heats, I imagine heats probably take a couple of hours to get through in the morning. I don't think it's a particularly big deal. There's a lot of time in the day. There's always a big gap of swimming. Don't forget they run heats in the morning and finals in the evening. She's got several hours a day, many hours a day to devote to what's been done. The nitty gritty, she's also not on the AFL executive, Nicole Livingston. So
what you're saying is she's not involved in the key decisions anyway.
The number crunching that to get to the final outcome, I don't think she would have been.
That would have been Gill and Travis and
Walter Lee and those sort of people. So I don't think she's in the room for the framework part of it. I'm sure she was involved in. So I'm not. I respect Chloe's opinion. She's at the coalface of AFLW, but I don't think it's a big deal.
You got an opinion on that, Pete?
I can understand the bad look of it.
The optics,
as we like to say these days. But I concur with everything Ash has just said. You've got to remind yourself the way that swimming championships are run. Heats in the morning, finals in the evening. She would have from lunch, to, you know, midday, 1 o'clock, whatever it is, until six in the evening to go about other business, which you would like to think would be AFLW business. So I don't have a great issue with it. And I sort of chuckled to myself, you know, with the side hustle. I mean, the industry that we're all in, you almost make a living out of side hustles, don't you?
I'm not as comfortable with it. She's supposed to be the boss of AFLW. The AFLW, in the first time in the league's inception, doesn't have a start date. And she's over commentating swimming. I really like Nicole. I think she's a really good operator. I thought that was an own goal, personally. But I take your point, but she doesn't have to be in the same room to get stuff done, and she still could have been working remotely. Understand all that. But I didn't like when Richard Goyder was making decisions. Was it last year when he could have come to Melbourne and decided to do it because he had a board meeting in WA for Qantas? I don't like it. Anyway, that's just my point of view. Moving on. Hey, so deadlines. Can you both give me an insight here? I feel like you use the D word around old school journos and anxiety goes through the roof. So I was working on a story, Ash, earlier before we started our first hour. And my deadline's basically got to be 6 o'clock because I can't really write after six unless I'm writing in ad breaks. And if it goes past six, well, I just know that I've got a longer night ahead of me and hopefully no one beats me to the punch and I can go sit on my laptop after I go off air and get a story up online. Might not make the paper though. It wasn't that long ago that wasn't a fallback option.
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I've got some deadline horror stories.
Yeah. I bet.
But it's...
Have you got one that springs to mind?
Yeah. It would be when I covered the... my first year as a journalist, as a full-time sports writer, I was sent to Adelaide for what became the epic state game between South Australia and Victoria that South Australia won in the dying seconds. We used to have these very clunky... acoustic couplers, I call laptop things that you carried in a suitcase. I was never very good at them, and I never did anything like try to practice sending some test files in the meantime. And of course, I pressed the wrong button, and the copy was totally garbled.
Oh no!
And disappeared about 5 minutes before deadline. So I had to basically dictate it on the spot, just from the best of my notes. Delayed the paper by significantly. To get my story in.
Which is a big issue.
And yeah.
It's a big deal doing that.
Yeah, it was Patrick Smith was my sports editor. And at the end of it, he said, we'll review your performance when you get back. And I flew back the next morning thinking, from Adelaide, it was in Adelaide, flew back the next morning thinking I was going to get sacked. And justifiably so. But he basically said, you've got one last chance to redeem yourself. And I worked very hard on the technology thereafter. Beaver. So that's my deadline story. And
love that.
I'd live to find another day. But that can be daunting. I've seen very good journalists, and I'm not going to name someone on air that... but even another story, we might talk about it off air, about a journo that we both worked with who had a major deadline malfunction one day.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking about it.
Come on. No, they won't mind.
I'm not going to name this person on air.
Was that at Princess Park?
Before my time, I've heard the story.
Okay. Or maybe we're talking about... different people.
Have you got a horror story, Ben?
I've got a few. Well, not so much horror stories, just the way that it would leave the adrenaline pumping. Before I started on sport on the Herald March 88. I covered police rounds for about 6 or 8 months before that, including covering, I started, thankfully, just, I missed the Hoddle Street Massacre, but I covered the Queen Street Massacre, which was 4 months after. And I can remember the worst type of journalism is intrudes, where once, you know, the names of the victims were released, you went to try and get an interview with the next of kin.
Yep.
And because there was the 8 victims, I remember with Norm Orloff, famous photographer, one of the interviews we had to do was actually up near Pentridge. And but coming back into town, because the Herald being an afternoon paper, and clear with the traffic, and he had to get back to the dark room to develop his pictures. So
not like today, we just chuck it into the laptop and send it into the system in 10 seconds.
All that sort of stuff. So he dropped me off somewhere. There was no way known I was going to be able to get back to the office in time and bash out 10 or 12 pars. So I remember somewhere in the city running into a jeweller's shop and thrusting a 10 or 20 cent piece and saying, I need to use your phone, and then filing copy over the phone to our copy takers that used to take your call, you know.
This is mind-blowing to me.
Stop, break, new par.
Stop, new par.
Which now the great Bruce Tobin has produced T-shirts, famous police roundsman. I've got a couple of – have you got one of those T-shirts?
I need to get one.
You do. Black T-shirt, white writing, stop, break, new par. And so even that, it gives me a shudder just thinking back to those days, let alone as well with the Herald, pre-mobile phones, and you used to have to – so you're ringing people very early in the morning for stories. I can't remember which order it was with Ross Oakley and Alan Schwab. Jeff Poulter taught me this. There was one of them, you had about a seven-minute window from about 6.37 to 6.45 between them being out of the shower and having their breakfast and getting in the car to ring them at home if you wanted to get them. And some
on the
of the
landlines, of course.
Yeah, some of the horror stories. And I'm good mates with him now. I remember having to ring Robert Shaw and wake him up in a Hobart hotel after Fitzroy had been clobbered in a pre-season game by Hawthorn. Did he give me the rounds of the kitchen, as which we all used to cop that at various stages. So we could regale you, Sammy, with those stories.
I had to ring Ron Barassi to tell him Ted Whitten passed away, and then got Ron Barassi to dictate a column to me. This was about 9:30 at night.
Oh my goodness! So what was that about?
Sydney, 95. Ron was in Sydney, and he hadn't heard. And Ron had an agreement to write for The Age.
His last year as coach.
Last year as coach. So that was a deadline. Then we had to compose a Barassi column on deadline.
We could talk about that for hours, couldn't we? We could do a whole podcast on deadline horror stories. Let's go to this, Matty. You ain't nothing
but a hound dog. And now on Sports Day, Hound Wars with Ash Brown.
It's a tight leaderboard. Tom Brown and Sam Landsberg are both tied on 11 votes going into this week. Mitch Cleary, 10. Ash.
Well, Sam Landsberger is now the outright leader. He gets 3 votes for the Essendon-Nova-Paris story.
Yeah.
There are leaks coming out of Essendon.
There are.
But,
it's a good story.
Good story from Sam.
Big tick.
He gets 3.
It was in The Australian as well, inside Jess Halloran's piece. Yep. So the News Corp had a really good Thursday.
2 votes to Kath Loughnan. For the Clarko interview that, you know, just coming onto 360 and setting the agenda for about Clarko's aspirations for what will get him back into coaching. I thought it was really good work.
You know, I don't know if many people know this, but Kathy's obviously an excellent presenter. But I think the thing that gets lost about her sometimes is that at her core, she's just a really well-researched interviewer. And it's not easy. That's not an easy skill to have. I mean, she knows her footy inside out. We know she's an A-plus presenter. But you saw there sitting next to Alistair Clarkson, completely holding her own, asking genuinely good questions. I thought it was a terrific interview and a wonderful moment for Fox, because Fox have a lot of great callers and a lot of great presenters. But like I thought she was really, really impressive.
And 1 vote to Mitch Cleary for the Indigenous All-Stars game, which I think looked like fairly informed mail.
He's having a great year, Mitch, isn't he?
Mitch has been a very good recruit for 7. So that is this week's Hound Wars.
Anything for you to add there, Beth?
No. I'm just looking at the record, which Ash has done a magnificent job again putting it together, of course.
Who's on the cover there?
Well, we've got Chad Wingard, Buddy Franklin, Charlie Cameron and Sonny Boy Walters.
Sonny.
Because it is the Doug Nichols round. Rounds, isn't it?
Rounds, we have two rounds. 2 weeks.
Yes. Which I like that, actually, because it gives
every team home and away.
Home game.
Yeah, exactly. I think it works really well.
Am I going to make this comment or am I not? No, I'm going to make it. I absolutely love the Indigenous jumpers every year. And I think they actually get better every year.
I would have loved someone at the start of the year to look at the Richmond one and then look at the Essendon one and think, hang on, aren't these two teams playing each other? Do they look a little too similar? There's going to be jumper confusion on Saturday night. Guaranteed.
Last year it was the Anzac game jumpers with similar. Yes. This year it's
Did you notice that, Bev, when you're looking at the jump? Like, they both individually look unbelievable. 11 out of 10. Together, playing against each other, how can anyone know who they are?
I must admit, I haven't quite noticed that. I'm going to have to go back and
have a look.
That's no good.
Do you know, just on that, and not wanting to bring my club into it.
I thought we'd get to the same somewhere.
No, well, I actually suggested to Matt Finnis a couple of years ago. I'm not sure why 1 year, and St Kilda's wearing the Nicky Winmar design jumper again for the second year in a row.
Which is a great jumper.
I'm just not sure why 1 year St Kilda just doesn't change the white to yellow. And then we've just have the Aboriginal flag. Red, yellow, black.
It's a pretty good suggestion.
Matt thought that as well. But anyway.
It hasn't pointed your influence at St Kilda's waning, Peter.
Thank you. There's not much influence.
Ash, great to have you on.
Good to be here.
Ash Brown, the chief of the AFL record on Sports Day every Thursday.
You're listening to Sports Day. It's powered by Red Energy. Moving house, call local energy retailer Red Energy. And for Wilson Homes, celebrating the biggest cash discount ever. Sammy, time to talk some boxing. It's a week on.
One of your favourites.
Yeah, love the sport. I've covered it for a long, long time. And, of course, last week in the big pay-per-view show, Chris Tezeski. He didn't stop Paul Gallen, but he probably stopped Paul Gallen's career with a very emphatic victory to defend his Australasian heavyweight title and also claim the vacant Australian heavyweight title. And he's on the line now, a week on, and I wonder whether it has actually sunk in, his achievement. Chris, welcome to Sports Day.
Thanks for having me, boys. Appreciate it.
Well, a week on, has it sunk in what you achieved last Wednesday night?
Yeah, it sunk in, mate. That pain in my hand is reminding me every day. So, still healing up from the fight, but it was an amazing achievement, and I'm wrapped with how I went down, yeah.
I'm sure your hands would be pretty sore, given some of the heavy artillery that you unloaded on Paul Gallen. Just how tough is he, considering the amount of punishment that he took? You hit him with an uppercut in the midway part of the fight, which I think would have stopped the rhinoceros, but your hands are paying the price?
Yeah, they are, mate. He's definitely... Look, I knew going into the fight that he was going to be tough. I've seen that in his previous fights. But like you said, mate, I hit him with an uppercut. I thought I only took his head off. And some of the shots that I was hitting him with, a credit to him, because I thought I could have put down a horse for some of those shots.
So, Chris, after a fight like that, what's the recovery like?
I was actually saying to my partner the other day, I haven't come out of a fight. I felt all right. There was a couple of shots there that Paul was cracking me in the back of the head that I was a little bit sore there. And basically, like I said, just my hands. The guy's got a head like a brick.
But so do you, the night of that fight, are you able to sleep well? Like all the hits to the head, the pain that your body would be in physically.
The adrenaline still.
The adrenaline, I mean, AFL players talk about staring at the ceiling until 4 a.m. when they play a night game. When do you start feeling yourself again, Chris?
Yeah, mate, it was a little bit like that. I suppose, you know, there is a lot of adrenaline, and I always look forward to moments, you know, after you do come out of the fight, you know, you're relatively safe and healthy, and you can talk about it with your friends and sort of, you know, you're reliving some of the moments that happened in the fight. So that's what I sort of did. I just caught up with some friends and, we just spoke about the night, and, you know, this for me, this was a dream come true. Like, you know, I've had this massive opportunity sort of thrust upon me, and then we had 5 weeks notice for the fight, 4 weeks to really train and prepare, and then all of a sudden your moment's there, and then to come out the other side of that. And for me, I always thought, you know, it was just about controlling my own emotions on such a big stage, and I knew if I could, you know, control my emotions and be calm in that sort of chaos, that I would come away with the win. So just looking back at it, it was just good to sort of relive some of those moments again. And you're hyped, you're pumped and the rest of it. But to be honest, when I did get home, I hit the hay fairly quick. I was a really taxing bout for me. I've never felt so bloody exhausted ever. So, yeah, I sort of hit the hay pretty quick.
There's an old saying in boxing, skills pay the bills. And I'll firstly look at... Skills pay the bills. And really, people that follow boxing closely weren't all that surprised at the result, because Chris is a very slick boxer, very talented southpaw, and in terms of boxing has levels, and nothing against Paul Gallen, who obviously the higher profile fighter, but he's an ex-NRL superstar who's just a walk-up slugger. I'm not saying he's
brute force.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah. But did you see it like that as well, Chris, that really when you...
So you're saying a blunt instrument versus a surgeon. Is that what we're going for?
Yeah, that's not a bad analogy. Chris, would you agree with that?
Yeah, mate. Well, you know, even in the build-up, I think we're both under no illusions. Even Gallen himself was saying that, I know he's the better boxer. He's a prettier boxer. But he goes, I just believe I'm tougher and eventually I'll get to it. And that was something that I wanted to prove him wrong about too. You know, he was saying, you know, he thought there was quid in me and things like this. So, you know, essentially I said to him, if you had been a bit nice in the build up, mate, you might have had me. But I think you're right. It was skills that paid the bills, and it was a testament to the work I put in that short time. You know, my coach Ray Giles, we did a hell of a lot of work, and because we did have a fairly short preparation, you know, he sort of said to me, he goes, we've got to go old school with this, mate. He goes, you've got to get the K's in your legs, you know, do the work on the road and do some hard sparring, you know, get that match fitness under our belt. So that's what we did, and we're doing hard rounds with simply the instruction to the guys that were helping me, just go out there and take his head off. So we knew that's what Gal was going to do, and we prepared as best we could. And I think, just dealing with that constant pressure, people coming forward, coming at you, that's what helped me get over the line with it, I think.
So, Beaver, as someone that loves watching a great fight versus you who live and breathe a lot of the sport and the politics behind it, so what does an Australian heavyweight champion do now? How does the next bout work?
Well, that was going to be the next question, because we've now got the, and Chris, this is no disrespect to him, he now owns the titles regionally. He's the Australian heavyweight champion and the Australasian heavyweight champion. But the biggest all-Australian heavyweight fight in many years is only 4 weeks away in Justice Huney against Joseph Goodall. So, Chris, the obvious question is, you'll be watching that with interest, as we all will in a month's time. And is it just the obvious conclusion that you'll be next in line to fight the winner?
Yeah, mate, I think that's what's been spoken about. And I'll definitely be looking at that fight closely, you know what I mean? It's an exciting matchup seeing those two boys go at it. You know, I love boxing for the skill of the sport and the art form that it is. And seeing those two guys, you know, they're built as two of the best sort of amateur boxers that the country's produced in the heavyweight division, or the super heavyweight division in the amateur ranks. So I'll be looking at it with a keen eye. You know, I think I fought Joe Goodall twice in the amateurs, lost in like razor split decisions against him. So I feel very confident, you know, in that matchup. And I was saying, you know, even with people like Gal or anyone that I step in and compete with, for me, it's about challenging myself and getting the best out of myself. And I feel like a fight with either of those boys would definitely challenge me and bring out the best in me. So, you know, people actually called me cocky before. They said, who's this bloke? He's come out of nowhere saying that a fight between myself and Justice would be a fight with the two best pure boxers. You know, I fancy myself. I think, you know, the skills that I showed on last Wednesday and, the fight that he had with Gal, it looked fairly similar in terms of our skill sets. You know, we have different styles, but we are two very good boxers. So I think that'd be a pleasure to watch as well. So it's definitely something looking closely at, mate. And, mate, the best man win with those two boys. I wish them both luck. But, I'd love to have a crack and an opportunity at the winner for sure.
Almost out of time. Two very, very quick ones before we let you go. You're not the biggest heavyweight going around. And we know the WBC has introduced the Bridgerweight class, 91 kilo to 102 kilo. Are you looking potentially at fighting in that weight class as opposed to... legitimate heavyweight?
Yeah, look, mate, the beauty of this is that there is a lot of options, and I think something like that is appealing to me as well. You know, a couple of the boys have fought. I tell you what, some of the Islander boys that, you know, live down our way, one guy I fought was 6'8" and 138 kilos. So I'm at a fairly big size disadvantage against some of these guys. So I think at a bridger weight limit, I walk around at about 100 to 103 kilos. So that would suit me to the ground. You know, I'd be the big guy in that division, which is something I'd be looking forward to. But if a fight with, say, like a Justice or a Goodall came up, I'd definitely entertain something like that. But I'd also really look to establish myself in the bridgeweight division also.
And just finally, it'd be remiss of us not to ask, 2.5 weeks out from the biggest Australian boxing event on these shores in many, many years, Kambosos against Devin Haney. How do you see it?
Mate, you got to go with your countrymen. I'll always back George Kambosos. But I'm looking forward to it. It's a thrilling fight, mate. You know, it's amazing that we're getting these big type of fights on our shores. You know what I mean? It was only not long ago we just come through the pandemic. So to have a fight of that magnitude on somewhere like Marvel Stadium, mate, is absolutely amazing. I'll be tuning in and I'll be going for George Kambosos all the way.
Chris, great to have you on. We really appreciate it. Good luck, whatever the future holds.
Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Chris Tezewski there, after the fresh off the win from Paul Gallen. So just before we go, I'm so fascinated, Beaver, with boxing purely about the weight classes and the different fights you can have across different divisions. Like, that's what makes the sport so interesting. People that don't understand it, and I'm not saying I do, but just think it's, you know, two blokes are always similar size, just getting up there and beating the living crap out of each other. It's so different to that. The question I was going to ask you was, so Chris just said he was about walking around 102, 103 kilos. So Gallen would have been about the same?
Yeah, in fact, Gallen was about the same, actually, yeah.
So when when Mayweather and Pacquiao had that famous fight, was it back in 2015, 16, somewhere around there? What, would they have fought both been, what, under 70 kilos at the time?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, they'd both come up through, I reckon Manny Pacquiao might have even started as a flyweight. He won across eight different weight divisions, remembering over the years they've added junior and super. So there's very small increments now. But yeah, a lot of these, well, the lightweight fight between Kambosos and Haney, so that's at 135 pound. So about nine stone in the old, around about 59 kilo.
And I remember
61 kilo.
Sorry. I remember reading the reviews of that fight and people saying, oh, Mayweather's just boring to watch because you can't hit him. And I was watching going, this is awesome because you can't hit him for the exact same reason. Like you talk about skills paying the bills.
Whatever you think of Mayweather, an amazing defensive fighter.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap up Sports Day with Bruce Eva right after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and Wilson Homes. Jared going to Java has completely messed up our entire tipping comp, so Beaver and I are going to do our own for round 10. Beaver, Carlton, Sydney at Marvel.
First, am I tipping for Jared?
No, you're tipping for you.
Okay. Hardest game of the round to tip, obviously. Sydney with no confidence.
Carlton with no confidence. Geelong, Port Adelaide?
Geelong, because it's at Geelong.
Geelong. Dogs, Suns?
Dogs, but not before getting a bit of a fright. They stuffed up their last game in Ballarat.
I agree entirely with that.
Yeah,
We're all tipping Melbourne to beat North.
Yep.
We're both tipping the Saints to beat Adelaide.
Don't want that to be a banana skin.
Richmond, Essendon, Dreamtime.
Essendon to give a little bit of cheek early, but not for very long.
You couldn't tip them, could you? Giants will beat West Coast comfortably. Hawthorne, Brisbane at in Tassie.
Brisbane.
And Fremantle and Collingwood at Optus. I reckon the Pies a sneaky chance, but I'm tipping Freo.
Well, no, because the fact that if Freo weren't coming off a loss and a bad loss at Metricon, Gold Coast, I think Freo will bounce back hard. Not so much give it to the Pies, but they'll handle their challenge comfortably.
Yeah, I'm a really close watch on Freo the next few weeks. I just want to see what happens with four men COVID.
Okay.
Four men COVID. I just think that they could lose a couple that they're not
supposed
to.
Collingwood actually usually go okay in
Perth. They played well at Optus Stadium.
Yeah, they do.
Yep, they won that game.
I'm still going to tip Fremantle, but you're starting to sway me.
Yep, Freo as well. Beaver, thanks for joining me this week.
Been great, Sammy.
Night, everyone.